a certainty, but it's going to be fine because I'm a genius sound editor at this point.
But we're really trying to eliminate some of that computer noise because Paige's computer just keeps getting louder and louder.
It's basically steam-powered is the thing.
Yeah. Anyway,
and welcome to Smart Girls Noise.
I'm Michelle.
And I'm Paige.
This week, we read an old favorite of ours.
Throwback.
Back released in 2003.
Yeah, which is like a way long time ago.
We read this when we were in
11.
Yeah, we read this when we were in middle school.
Middle school.
Whoa. When we were actually young adults. It's A Great and Terrible Beauty by Libba Bray.
Yeah, so we all know this book.
Everybody. We both know it. We assume you do too.
Of course you do. Of course you do. You definitely know the cover. The cover is beautiful, and that's probably like a large part of its draw. Obviously. This is the book that like really made me, like, I don't want my spleen to be rearranged particularly, but the corset on the cover is super pretty. Like, it's really beautiful.
We could do that. We could. Now their corsets are coming back. That's what the Kardashians use.
For what?
They're called waist trainers now.
You don't train your waist so much as you just
crush it. You just literally move your organs around.
I mean, you know, they will give you a very defined waist.
Yeah, the Kardashians use them and like get paid a lot of money to promote them on Instagram.
So. Insane.
Speaking of Instagram, follow us there.
Yeah.
We're not a Kardashian, but we could be if you all followed us, sort of. In the sense that if you all followed us, then we'd have a lot of followers. I don't still think we'd be a Kardashian.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, yeah, beautiful cover. Like, corset, lace. I think it's pretty too. Michelle's throwing the book around.
She's like, it's her back. Mm-hmm. And she's just chilling.
Like, now there's all sorts of covers with, like, corsets and dresses. And including one, and I tried to find the title before we started recording, but I couldn't because it was not.
Because
a distinctive title?
Wait, we couldn't remember.
I don't remember any of the words, but it was clear. We saw this in Barnes & Noble like a year or two ago, and it is just like an absolute total knockoff of this book. Like, 100%. Like, there's no way to think it's not. Because the cover is like the same exact thing. It's a girl's back, like, corseted back. Mm-hmm. And the title is something, it's like a adjective and adjective noun.
Yeah. It's like a good adjective, a bad adjective noun, I think.
Maybe, yeah. And it's printed in the same way. Like, it's centered in the middle of the cover. Like, it's 100% the same book. And even, like, looking at the reading the back cover and everything, the synopsis, it appears quite similar. So. Yeah. So this is, like, there's lots of books now. They're, like, sort of boarding school books, sort of, like, fantasy, historical fiction, fantasy, boarding school, all sort of wrapped together, I feel like. Right. But I feel like this is the book that started them all. I don't actually know if that's true.
Started it for us.
It definitely did for us. But I feel like this was the book that became, like, very popular. There was talk for a while of them making a movie.
Yeah.
And it never got off the ground, which is unfortunate.
Right.
So I remember thinking that'd be so cool.
And then the problem with books is, like, once this company has bought, like, the rights to your book, they have it. And so if they decide not to move forward with it, for whatever reason, like, you're screwed. Like... and sometimes they'll buy rights for, like, a limited time, and if they don't make the movie within, like, 20 years or whatever, 10 years, they will, like, whatever. But for the most part, like, yeah, once the studio's bought your movie rights, if they don't make it, then, like, sorry, I guess you don't get a movie.
Yeah. And I also feel like YA was such a smaller genre at the time it came out, 2003 or whatever, that that's part of what, why it spurred so much, is that there was a lot less competition, you know?
Right. But there also wasn't that, like, huge, because for a while there's that huge boom in the movie industry, where the movie industry was just cranking out movies based on YA books.
When? You talked about, like, 3 years ago?
Yeah. But now it's tapering off. Like, the last Divergent book isn't going to be made a movie. They made part one into a movie. Well, the second part's going to be made for a TV movie, because they had to finish the freaking series, but the movies have been, like, hemorrhaging.
What are you talking about?
Divergent?
They made a movie. They made Allegiant. Now they're done.
It was supposed to be a two-part, because now they've also split all the freaking finales into two parts, because Harry Potter did it, and they were like,
freaking dumb.
Perfect.
That's a bad idea.
So, but yeah, now they have cut the theatrical release for the second part of the Divergent finale, and they are going to make it a made-for-TV movie, but with a spin-off TV show.
So is anyone going to come back for that?
I don't know.
Like, is it going to be a cast for
that? Shailene Woodley, like, is like a real actress.
Right.
So, kind of doubtful. And the director isn't coming back? Who did part one is not coming back for part two.
I'm just reading about this and reading on Wikipedia at the same time, and I'm like, that sounds like a big problem.
Well, because, like, the first movie did very, very well, and then they've substantially done, like, much worse. And they just, like, don't think they're going to turn a profit on the last one.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, I think people got a little bit carried away. Because Harry Potter was a global phenomenon, okay? And then you had Twilight, which was also, like, a big freaking deal. So, yeah, they all made a lot of money. But then people were like, oh, let's just start... Just to start right. throwing out to the Hunger Games is good too, but I feel even towards the end, I feel like Hunger Games didn't make as much.
It's hard to true, sustain that much energy over such a long release. That's so many movies. Like, Harry Potter is, like, on its own. Harry Potter is still, like, a cultural phenomenon.
Right, yeah. So anybody who's going off of Harry Potter to forecast their own movie is obviously an idiot.
Harry Potter has kind of proved in the time that it's been around, which obviously, like, in the grand scheme of things, isn't very much, to be sort of timeless. Mm-hmm. Where, like, things like Twilight, people that love Twilight don't still love Twilight.
Well, I think they like, might, but, well, the rabid people, just, they're a much smaller group.
Right.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people kind of really aged out. Yeah, they've aged out of that series where Harry Potter translates a lot better. Harry Potter is not a good model. Right.
And so, also, J.K. Rowling needs to get off Twitter, though. Like, she needs to stop reviving things. I mean, like, her Twitter is great, except when she comes out with, like, new additions to her books, like, via Twitter. And she just, like, confirms stuff that is not canon. Like, hold on, lady. Like, I'm fine with The Cursed Child or whatever, though I actually know, like, extremely little about it.
Well, she's asked, because, I mean, it's just started in London, beginning of July. And she's asked people to not, I mean, like, when the heck am I ever going to have a chance to see it?
Right.
I guess they're coming out with a screenplay as a, like, a print that you could read, but.
I guess that's true, yeah.
Yeah, because there's The Cursed Child, and then there's also this Fantastic Beasts movie.
Yeah, I mean, those are fine to me, because those are sort of spinoffs. Like, okay, whatever. Like, I think at some point, maybe the well is going to run dry. You know, even for her.
Yeah.
But every now and then she, like, gets on Twitter, and she gives us 140 characters or something that.
Right.
That, like, is supposed to be part of the original universe, but there's, like, no one in the books.
And you're like, right. And I, like,
this isn't how we write
the writing. We've talked about this before, but for the most part, like, I believe that books, once they're done, belong to the audience. And so to go in and then be like, no, I know I didn't say this, but this is what happened, to, like, create additional narratives to add to your, to, like, canon, is a little bit, like, troubling. Because it no longer belongs to you.
That's the part that really, like, on Twitter?
I don't care about the medium.
A tweet from J.K. Rowling to tell me what.
Paige is too elite for tweets to me. Okay, she wants handwritten letters from J.K.
It's one thing if you still think that, like, the author's intent really matters and that they're able to revise the books, but, like, certainly how that works is that they like, legit, like, revise the book. They put out a different edition, which is not so popular to do anymore, I think, as it was, like, way back in the day. Or they write a different book. And, like, add on to it, or, like, whatever.
Right.
Not that they get on Twitter and just, like, let everyone know, oh, yeah, hey, by the way. What?
Yeah.
That's not you writing a novel. That's not you reviving. That's just you sending that tweet to everybody. Just clarifying.
Well, I think it's a lot of times it comes from a place where people ask her, and it's, like, so she answers.
I guess that's true.
I think people should take ownership, and, like, part of the beauty of books is that you get to, like, live in the world that you create, kind of, simultaneously with the author. Like, it's part of it's you working to build this world. Mm-hmm. You gotta use your imagination, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, we should get back to the book we actually read.
Anyway, this not Harry Potter.
We didn't read Harry Potter. I don't think we'll ever read Harry Potter.
It would never sustain a movie at this point in its lifespan.
No, it's too old. I think maybe eventually, like, one day far, far away. No, probably not. I don't know. I don't know how
to never mind. I think it could sustain something. Like maybe a TV show, yeah.
A lot of books are moving that way too because Pretty Little Liars did so well. But the problem with TV shows is you cannot be super in Game of Thrones too. You can't be as authentic to the book as you can in a movie.
I think you can, but you have to impress limits. You can't be like, you have to be like, okay, like, I wrote four books, this is what's in the books, and this is all that you will be filming. we're not gonna make seven seasons
yeah.
when we only have material for four.
Well, I think
we're gonna cut it off.
The shows that do really well that are based on books, though, really take the source material as inspiration and then really just go a totally different direction from it. Like, Pretty Little Liars, like, I read the first four books in that series, and they're just, like, very distant cousins to the television show. Same thing with, like, Gossip Girl.
I think it depends on the quality of the
same material. Thing with Vampire Diaries.
I think, like, but when I think Pretty Little Liars, Gossip Girl, Vampire Diaries, like, the quality of the written material, the books, was, like, vastly inferior to the TV show that they eventually became. So I think when you're working from something that's like, there's a good idea somewhere in there, but the writing itself and the book is actually like holding the idea back, then as a television person you're like, okay, we're gonna blow this up and can't yeah. start over. Whereas if you, like if someone, if I really like this, what is this called? As a series?
This is called, does have a name.
Is it a Great Terrible Beauty trilogy?
No. Because that would be a problem.
No.
It's something else. I don't know if it says it on this book. This book was like...
Well, anyway. Well, like, I really like this trilogy, and I would be upset if a TV show changed a bunch of stuff.
Well, I think but that's I feel like too bad so sad. I think that's what has to happen when it goes to TV. Unless they do something like a miniseries, or like a Netflix, or like a Hulu, yeah. Amazon, one of those streaming services where they release Netflix. It.
Is Series of Unfortunate Events ever happening?
Yeah.
It's good. That, I mean, like, Netflix just official teaser trailer looked amazing.
Amazing, but it's actually happening. Because I've seen stills of Neil Patrick Harris in the makeup.
Oh, cool. Sorry, side note. Oh, this has been a nice, this one long side note.
This is called the Gemma Doyle trilogy.
Okay, that's kind of a dumb name. By kind of, I mean, it's a completely dumb name. Okay. And I guess, like, the first title of your book doesn't lend itself well to giving a nice title to your trilogy.
And none of the
books,
too.
I don't know what you call it, but, yeah, I guess you kind of it. It's kind of screwed.
Anyway, we're not in charge of making this a TV show or a movie, which is a good thing.
So if we were, I mean, like, that'd be fine. Like,
we would fight so much, as you might have noticed.
Call us.
No, don't call us. We don't have time for this.
That would be amazing.
We don't have time.
We're going to get into television. Don't worry about it.
We are not going to get into television.
Back to the book we say.
Sorry.
We haven't started it.
I don't know how far we are into this, because I can't see the timer at this time.
We're, like, 15 minutes in.
Well, I felt like we were, like, 45, so that's good.
Even to us, that seemed like a long time. Okay, so if you don't know the plot, I mean, obviously you've already read this piece that you're going to write, but we'll recap the plot if, like us, you read it in middle school and it's been a while. So I feel like we were talking about this before. This is a book that I know I reread the series, and we were talking, and I feel like because this third one came out when we were, like, sophomores, I want to say, that I think I reread, we read 1 and 2 in middle school, and then right before we read 3, we had to reread 1 and 2 and then read 3.
Pretty sure that's not working. I don't remember. I remembered, like, literally nothing that happened in this book.
I remembered a lot of what happened. Not everything, but a lot.
I feel like I remember things that happened in later ones, because, like, in later books, she goes to an opium den at some point, and I was disappointed that didn't happen, because I remember that being, like, one, I didn't know about opium dens, so I think it just, like, opened my eyes to the world of opium dens. And it being a profound moment in my life, so I remembered it. But I also remember there being, like, a lot more action, where a lot of this book is kind of just like setting up, you're introduced to the characters, you're introduced to kind of the mythology behind the magic that happens in this book.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think that's, yeah, there's definitely, for me as well, there's a lot of stuff I remembered happening in the series that didn't happen in this book. And I do think this one is missing a lot of sort of the action and events that we have in the coming books of the series. But I remember, like, as, you know, reading it, however long ago that was, like, I didn't feel like it was boring or anything.
No, and I still don't think it was boring.
Yeah. But I think of maybe as a reread, we're kind of just, like, waiting for this other stuff to happen, maybe.
Yeah.
There was a lot of setup, but it wasn't boring. Whatever. Let's move on. We're going to quickly recap the plot for you. If it's been a while. And by quickly, we mean, like,
20 and a half hours. 25, whatever.
We're going to aim for a minute and a half, and we're going to take 30, so. You ready? Okay.
Hopefully.
Okay, so we started in India, so that our heroine is Gemma Doyle. She lives with her family in India because colonialism. And I don't even know what her family does there. It's completely unclear. Maybe they're just leisure class. Maybe they literally have nothing.
It, like, seems weird nothing. Because, like, her dad would be the one with the job, and right. when
would be like a
mom shell. Dies, he just, like, goes back and is a hollow shell of a man. I don't know.
That's true. That's not
true. I don't think job.
I don't think he does.
Maybe they just hang
well,
out.
Well, or they're, it's never, whatever, they're in India for an undetermined reason. And this opens on Gemma's 16th birthday. Mm-hmm. And her mother and her are walking through the market, and Gemma is just, like, having a rough life because she wants to go back to London to go to school.
Which, she's never been to London.
I could see maybe, like, wanting to go back to London. I'm not sure. I'd be, like, send me to finishing school. Which we find out, like, once she gets to London and boarding school, she hates it.
It's like, yeah, because she, like, has lived the first 15 years of her life in India, not going to a finishing school. So, like, she's, like, real behind on her French, we find out. Like, she's not where all the other girls are in terms of, like, the also, skills you learn in finishing school.
Right. And also, just, like, it sucks. You know?
Also, you have to wear a corset
for a lot. There's a lot of rules. There's a lot of, like, restrictions. She had to wear corsets
in India, probably.
I don't know.
She whines about it more. No, she doesn't, because she, like, doesn't know how to put one on. She doesn't put one on, but she's like, oh, maybe not. I don't know. She doesn't have anyone to help her. And she's like, I don't have a maid. This is the worst.
Well, that, anyway. that's like, accurate, though. I mean.
Yeah.
Like, that's heck? Not something you put on by yourself.
What do the you other girls do? There's seven of them in their year.
I don't
one know. Of them must not have a roommate. There's or six maybe there's a triple. Year. Gemma makes seven. Is that true? No, Gemma makes six.
Is there a Martha in this story? Mm-hmm. Okay, so Cecily lives with Martha.
So yeah, there's seven. Yep, so there's seven of them.
Anyway, okay, the point
maybe
is...
Maybe there's a triple.
But actually, from, like, a historical standpoint, and this is something that I tried to get my students to realize when we did the 1920s, because I had this example of a, like, a woman's dress from the 19-teens and a 20s dress, and they look very, very different. And one of the things when you're looking, because the 20s dress is just like a simple shift, like whatever you put it on over your head. A lot less structure, a lot more revealing. But the teens, the dress from the teens is like, you know, skirt, bodice, a jacket, everything. There are a lot of hooks and stuff. And one of the things that I like wanted students to see, it took some prompting to get them, because it was their first like experience with like looking at material culture and trying to draw conclusions from artifacts. But like, looking at the dress from the teens with all the hooks, with all the fastening, with all the whatever, especially if you think about corsetry, like, this is only for wealthy women. Mm-hmm. Like, middle class, poor women cannot wear this. A, because you have to have someone else to put you into it. You have to have a maid who's going to dress you. So if you're not wealthy enough to have a maid who will dress you, this is not what you wear. So you can tell, like, the social class just from looking at it. So same thing with the corsets. Like, I don't know who's putting the corsets on them. Because you're not doing it on your own. Mm. It laces up in the back, for crying out loud.
Right.
It's not like you can lace it in the front and just turn it around.
Oh my gosh. Well, I think the girls went to putting it on each other.
Probably.
When they're
there,
at school.
Maybe there is a maid in the school who, like, comes and dresses them all. In the morning, we just never hear.
Their morning routine was actually, I don't have very many notes on this book because I'd already read it.
Yeah.
And I was also trying to read it pretty quickly. Paige and I read this in the past 24 hours, both of us.
Yeah.
Anyway, but... One of my notes is that they, like, complain a lot about, like, being late to breakfast. They don't have to get breakfast until 9 o'clock.
Are you serious?
In the morning.
Shut up.
And they whine about being tired all the time. And I was like, you guys, like, hung out outside till, like, midnight, maybe 1 o'clock. And you're like, I'm so tired. And I'm like, guys, you got, like, probably at least, like, 6 or 7 hours of sleep.
That is a full night for me.
Oh my gosh. And they were just like, we're like walking zombies. Yeah. And they, I think that
they did mention at one point they stayed up till like dawn-ish.
That was one time.
That's true. But I feel like they usually start at midnight, but like, how long are you going to go, you know? And if they don't have to be at breakfast till 9.
Right, and then I don't think classes start till 10. So like,
God. This is like an app. This is like the most leisurely breakfast.
Anyway, I was really confused and a little bit annoyed at, like, how much whining they did about, like, their tiredness. And, like, I think Lights Out was supposed to be at 10, or that's when they were, like, supposed to retire to their rooms or whatever. And I was like, you don't have to be back. You did 11 hours to just, like, hang out. Anyway, that was one thing I noted.
We're supposed to be talking about the plot.
Well, that's a plot point.
Oh, yeah, it's an instructive. So back to page one.
They're okay. An idea still.
Right, Gemma's having a rough life. She's being, like, not super
she's
nice.
She's being 16.
She's pretty much a brat at this point.
As we all were at 16. Paige has always been perfect, shockingly, guys. I know it's hard to, like, I mean, it's not hard to believe, because she's so perfect now that, like, when would she have ever had a boss?
Exactly.
Exactly. Anyway. So, like I was at 16, and most 16-year-olds, but not Paige.
Yeah, exactly.
Paige was always charming and lovely to her family and everyone around her.
That's true. And so... and so... I mean, I... Whatever, never mind. Okay, so they're in the market with their mother. And Gemma is, like, you know, being really rude or whatever. And then this random guy appears out of nowhere and whispers to her mother that Cersei is back. And her mom, like, freaks out, but pretends like she's not. And so she sends Gemma home. And Gemma, like, kind of turns away this... We're, sorry. But you have to know this part. Gemma kind of, like, decides to, like, walk home. And she, like, gets mad and, like, turns around or whatever. To, like, go find her mom. And then she, like, has a vision in the middle of all this. And she sees her mom get murdered. Because her mother and this random guy who showed up face this, like, demon creature.
In the shadow. It's like a moving shadow situation.
Creepy. Really and her creepy. Mother stabs herself. And the random guy who had showed up is, like, sucked into the creature thing.
Yeah.
And then Gemma, like, runs and finds her mother murdered.
Yep.
That's that.
Also, this is semi-important. That's the book. Before she runs off, her mother gives her this amulet.
Right.
And is like a crescent moon and an eye. Yeah.
Crescent eye.
Anyway. So then her mother gets murdered. Then we flash forward 2 months into the future.
And Gemma finally got her wish, being packed off to London to go to school.
Yep. They, like, stayed with her grandma for a while, but once school was, like, starting again, she goes to a finishing school called Spence. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Lost my train of thought there.
Yep, so then she's at school, which, you know, she's with a bunch of, hey, look, ponytail holder. Perfect. Rich girls, mostly. Very privileged young women who are also real bitches.
Yeah, they're all pretty horrible. There's only 6 of them, so Gemma makes 7 in their year. There's obviously other years there, but we never really talk about them or to them.
Yeah, whatever.
They don't have names. We don't care.
Gemma gets to stay with the scholarship student, Anne. Mm-hmm. So Anne is, like, the one not wealthy student.
Mm-hmm. And she's an orphan.
As such, she's completely ostracized.
Yeah.
She's just there to study to become a governess, basically, so. None of these girls really have futures of their own.
So she comes in and she goes to the headmistress's office, and the headmistress is like, so, pretty much, you're here to, like, prepare yourself to find a husband, mm-hmm. or... if you're not as lucky, maybe you can work here one day. Those are, like, your 2 options. So there's also an interesting dynamic between, like, the students and the teachers, because these students assume that they're going to be married for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And the teachers are all people that have failed to get married.
Essentially, yeah.
For whatever reason. So then we're introduced to Anne. Anne, who is Gemma's roommate, we mentioned scholarship student. And then this whole kind of gaggle of other girls, the other 5 girls in their year.
Yeah.
We're going to introduce all of them. The ones that are important are Felicity. Felicity's like the head honcho.
Mm-hmm.
She would be the Regina George if this was Mean Girls. and then Pippa is like Felicity's like number 2.
Yeah, Felicity's best friend. Pippa is the most beautiful person you can tell because she has violet eyes. Only the most beautiful girl.
That's what I really wanted as a child.
Right?
Something,
but silver would be okay too.
But Felicity is pretty cool. Everyone's like kind of obsessed with her.
She's the admiral's daughter. Her mom lives in Paris and runs a salon. Yeah. I don't know how you pronounce it in French, so I'm not gonna try.
And then there's one other girl.
Huh?
Support? No, the rest of them are not.
No, there's no.
And there's 3 other girls.
These girls get shoved aside.
We don't care about them. We think we might care about them initially, but we don't.
Yeah, so everyone's really mean to Gemma. Gemma's behind. Gemma doesn't fit in. Blah, blah, blah. She can't find a place with friends. She doesn't want to just, like, cast off Anne because she's roommates and she sees that that's, you know, mean. But she also doesn't want to get dragged down by Anne. There's, like, no place in the social order for her. It's obviously a mess. In the meantime, Gemma starts, she has this vision when her mother was murdered, and she starts to keep having these visions, which is problematic.
Yeah.
It's stuff she shouldn't be able to see, obviously. I can't remember exactly how the first one started out, But, like, it's scary and disorienting, and she has no idea what's going on, and, like, her mother is murdered, but, her, you know, the story is that her mother died of cholera, so...
Because having your mother be murdered really, like, puts a damper on the family's reputation.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's a lot about, like, appearances and reputation, because for these girls, it's, like, all they have. Right. Like, if you lose your reputation, you're unmarriable, you, like, have no way to inherit wealth, mm-hmm. because you're a woman, so, like, pretty much ruins your life.
Yep.
So it's, like, and that's a continued theme throughout the novel, is how these girls have to keep up appearances, even when things are not always as, like, picture-perfect as they would want to present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so Gemma's having these visions, and how do they have fallen with these friends? Well, she kind of, like, becomes part of, like, Felicity starts to accept her, really only because she becomes like, the keeper of Felicity's secret. Because Felicity has been meeting, there's, on the school's land, there are gypsies camping, which seems, like, not the kind of situation a headmistress then or now would allow.
They seem, like, annoyed about it, but, like, also don't do anything about it.
Yeah,
they're like, nothing. Be careful, there's gypsies, they're kind of annoying.
They're, like, upset about it, and they, like, everybody realizes that this is, like, an inappropriate situation, and, like, dangerous, mm-hmm. but everyone's just, like,
what are you doing here?
Which I think the reason that it's not addressing the situation is because, as we find out, I think in later books, you know, the head people, like, what's Mrs. Nightwing is head of just the boarding school. These people, they're really read into this whole order thing, and I think the gypsies are sort of part of that,
yeah.
in a sense. So that's why they're allowed to be there. It's not just that, like, oh, this really sucks, but we're not going to do anything about it. They, like, kind of have to go with this, sort of, I think.
We'll get that makes later. Sense. Well, one of, that sort of makes sense, because one of the, gypsy, he's actually a gypsy.
Well, I don't know if he's actually a gypsy, if he's just fallen in with them.
Right, but he was with Gemma when her mother was murdered, right?
Right, so the random, we find out later, the random person who appeared to Gemma's mother to warn her was her guardian, and his younger brother, who's Kartik, his younger brother is sort of Gemma's age, and he is the one who, like, sees Gemma as he was with his older brother when his older brother warned Gemma's mother, and so they kind of ended up, Gemma and him ended up together because I think he saw her having a vision.
Right, I believe so, yeah.
And then he really wants to know what she saw, and she keeps playing, like, oh, I didn't see anything.
But he shows up, and he's hanging out with the gypsies at the boarding school.
Yeah,
and
he's clearly like, here for Gemma.
Right, and he keeps, like, sneaking in her window and leaving her messages and, like,
threatening messages.
Yeah.
To stop having visions.
Also, there's, like, a weird dynamic between Gemma and this boy.
Yes, what do you mean?
There's, like, maybe romantic things, and also this, like, weird.
Pretty clearly.
There's, like, weird romantic things happening, which we'll get to later, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe. I had to go back and read that part, because my book has discussion questions at the end, and they, like, brought up a specific section, and I was like, wait a second.
I'm not totally sure what Michelle's referring to, so I'm just going to go
look anyway. Find it. So I'll just keep going.
So that's how she gets in with Felicity.
Mm-hmm. And she sees Felicity and this other gypsy hanging out at the lake by themselves, which is not allowed.
Hanging out by the lake by themselves is not what's going on. You make it sound like they were standing on shore skipping stones or something. That's not what that makes.
I mean... Not that clear. Maybe they are just hanging out.
They're making up is what's happening. Definitely.
I thought it was just, like, really scandalous because they were alone together.
Did you not read this book or something?
No. Confession time. No, I did read it. Whatever. So then Gemma is like, I know what will really get under Felicity's skin. I'll make her owe me one, which becomes in handy later. So, Felicity's indebted to Gemma for keeping her secret about the gypsy boy. So then, their art teacher is, like, kind of a little bit more, like...
Are we going to talk about this one?
Yeah, because we have to. That's how they, like, figure out about the order. They, like, okay. Go down to the cave one time because this art teacher is kind of more... I don't know.
It's very strange. Dead Poet Society.
Yeah.
It's super Dead Poet Society.
She's Robin Williams.
Yeah. Which, like, everyone...
Except they, like, really betray her, and they do not stand on their desks, and are like, oh, Captain, yeah. My Captain, when she leaves the school. They're like, bye. Goodbye. There it is. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
I mean, everything's Dead Poets Society is, like, really inspiring and uplifting. I'd like to remind everyone that a student shoots himself in that movie.
It's, like, really
which I was super not prepared for. We watched it in sophomore English class. Mm-hmm. Why? No idea. But we did. And I was just like, are you kidding? I thought this was supposed to be an
inspirational movie. We watched so many movies that are, like, just, like, tangentially related to something we might have covered in a class.
I just remember that, like, I was like, oh, we watched Bernice blow their hair in sophomore English, which is a horrible movie as well. She cuts her hair. She has her hair cut off by someone. Well, no, she gets tricked into it. And then that's her revenge. And she cuts off the other girl's hair.
Oh, my gosh. And then it was, like, awkward.
It's very traumatic for us because we have long hair.
Yeah. I don't know how much anymore. Mine's, like, average.
You saw bob her
hair. Not bobbed. But I did cut off 10 inches of hair, which is a lot. Anyway, it'll grow back, everyone. Don't be concerned. So the art teacher takes them out to the caves. There's caves on the grounds that have, like,
pictographs?
Cave.
What? Pictographs, like cave paintings.
Cave painting. Which is strange, but whatever. So she goes out and they're supposed to, like, talk about art throughout the ages and blah, blah, blah. And she also starts to mention that, that this has always been, like, a place where women with power have come to hide and blah, 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 blah. And she starts talking about this group of women that is a little bit more recent called the Order. And she doesn't talk a lot about them, but it's enough to kind of, like, really pique the girls' interest. Also, Gemma has this diary from one of the girls.
Gemma has a diary Mary Dowd, and even though I just read this, again, we read this in a 24-hour span, like just now, it's turning, it's not even 24 hours for me right now, I started this, like, 9:30 last night.
Started at 10:30.
Yeah, so we're just getting to the 24-hour span of this book. Even so, I can't remember how Gemma comes to have Mary Dowd's diary.
She, like, sneaks out, oh, the first night, the girls trap her in the church. And so she goes out one of the other doors, and then she sees a gypsy child that leads her to this hole in the ground as she sticks her arm in and pulls out Mary Dowd's diary.
I don't remember that at all.
That happens.
I remember her getting out of the church.
And then she, like, runs around back, and there's, like, a tiny gypsy girl.
I don't know.
Like a gypsy child.
Huh.
That, like, leads her to a hole. Anyways, they have this diary. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, and this diary is, you know, this girl talking, it's her, she's writing about her and her friend,
Sarah.
And they're getting involved in all this crazy stuff.
It starts out, like, really normal, and she's like, this is boring as heck, why did they make me find this in a hole? This is, like, a strange thing. But then things start to go downhill in the diary.
But it's starting to describe things that are happening to Gemma right now. It's describing these visions.
Uh-huh.
And so Gemma is, like, feels connected to this, and is going to read this to figure out what the heck is happening.
Right. And then we also come to find out, we're kind of, as we go throughout the book, more and more of the diary is kind of read aloud to us as the girls read it.
Mm-hmm.
But we also find out from various people within the school that one of the wings of the school burned down and that these two girls, the girls that, so Mary Dowd and Sarah, they both died in a fire in the East Wing. So these girls that both died are connected to these visions that Gemma is having. And so things are very strange. And we kind of watch this unfold as we watch Gemma kind of figure out what is happening to her as well.
Right. Though apparently this East Wing burned down, not structurally, but just on the inside.
Yep.
Because, like, the school is a complete building.
Yep.
And there's just a locked door and you're like, oh, it burned down over there. Just on the inside. So that's nice.
So strange. And, like, creeps me out.
As Mrs. Knight being said.
So much.
Yeah, that would freak me the hell out. Which most everything does. I mean,
there's a monastery in North Dakota that I've been to several times. And they are smaller than they used to be because they are. There's lots of them. And so part of their building they just, like, closed off and they, like, don't use. And whenever I stay there, I always have dreams that I, like, get lost in the part of the building they don't use, and it's horrifying. But anyway, I felt similar vibes from this.
Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, as a consequence of sort of Gemma keeping Felicity's secret and then being told these stories by their crazy art teacher, I just wanted to, again, point out Dead Poets Society is not the inspiration that everyone thinks it is. The teaching methods are also pretty questionable.
Anyway, no one cares, anyway. Paige.
They decide Felicity as the adventurous ringleader of this is just like, we need to outlive ourselves. Let's form a secret society. This is Super Deadpool Society too, they form a secret society. Which I've always wanted to do this. Michelle, how come we don't have a secret society that we meet late at night and just get drunk and light candles and stuff?
I don't know.
We should start one.
I've been another one.
Anyway, we're gonna start our own. It's gonna be even better.
We're not gonna tell you about it though, because otherwise it won't be a secret.
This is, yeah, this is the most you can hear. Anyway, okay, so they get formed this secret society. So they meet out in the caves at like midnight, which is super late, you know. That sucks when you go to bed and you have to wake up in the middle of the night to get started on something. It's not pleasant.
It's real hard. It's kind of fun, like once.
Yeah.
One like time to like a one time event.
It's a lark.
Yeah. After that.
Again?
No.
Smacks and Max. I think I'm quoting the first Outlander book. I don't think I came up with that on my own.
One time we did that in my hall. I was in a hall with a kitchen, and like all of our kitchen stuff was like gone. We had like no plates, no pots and pans, and we like started out with a bunch. And there were three other kitchens in our building. And so one night at like 2 a.m., we got up at the hall and we went to the other kitchens and stole all of our stuff back. Why didn't we do it in the daytime? I don't know, because it was way more fun to do at night. And it was like 15 minutes and we all went back to bed.
God forbid somebody see us taking a skillet, which, hey, who's going to comment on that? At college, everyone just assumes that, you know, whatever's going on is what's supposed to be going on.
Yeah.
People do weird stuff all the time and you're just like, I guess that's fine.
Right.
Also, I think if someone asked you, you were just like, this is ours, they would be like, okay.
We took a lot of stuff, though. We actually wound up having to go put some stuff back. Our RA was like, we have 17 colanders now. And we're like, whatever. But one girl had to, there was a boy doing homework in like one of the kitchens because even though it was 2 a.m., it was college, so like people were working. And she would like distracted him and asked him to go see the inside of his room. And so she showed her his room so he could like go steal things. It was the most ridiculous thing ever.
I don't know what
it
I
was
would
a
do.
Very successful hall program. Shout out to my RA that year. He was awesome.
I don't know what I would do if I was working on homework in the kitchen at 2 a.m. Well, if I was working on homework in the kitchen at 2 a.m., I would be crying. Because that sounds horrible. And then some random person was just like, hey, can I see your room? And I don't know what I'd do, but I don't think it would involve me showing them my room.
Worked really well. That's weird. That's always weird.
Like asleep.
Things are weird. College is a strange place.
Okay, back to the book. Okay, so these girls from the secret society, they sneak out of their rooms really late at night. It's unclear why the doors aren't locked. It's unclear why no one's locking the door into school. Because later when they find out, the headmistress starts and she's like, I'm gonna have to lock the door in now. And you're like, what were you doing before?
Like, is that really that big of a threat? Like, if they're not supposed to be sneaking out anyway, then, like, locking the doors shouldn't change anything for them.
Well, that's what were they not locked before? Does she think she's locking the girls' doors from the outside?
That seems kind of horrifying.
Yeah, again, fire happened. I just remember I was in the case, another side story because we can't stop. And when I was in high school, I was in the office early in the morning. Why? Probably because I was in trouble. I don't remember why, but I was in the office.
Were you sitting on the bad kid bench?
I don't remember. I don't remember what I was doing there, but let's just assume it wasn't for a positive reason. Generally well said. Anyway, so I was in the office and I overheard a conversation between two of the vice principals.
We had so many vice principals.
There were like six. We were at Punary School. And there was one who, like, they really didn't like students eating lunch anywhere that wasn't the lunchroom. Because students wanted to go eat in a hallway or a classroom.
Because the lunchrooms were sort of too small for all the students.
Well, yeah, there were also 1,800 kids there at school or something. And, like, we had two lunchrooms. And one of them was even smaller than the other one. The first one wasn't that big to start with.
Neither of them were that big.
They were not that big. I mean, we had rotating lunches, I guess. But they were still very crowded.
Yeah.
Also, and no loud. One had to eat there. And it was, yeah, super loud. It was just, obviously, for obvious reasons, someone wanted to eat there. I barely remember eating there. But the point is, I was there overhearing a conversation in the morning between two of the vice principals, and one of them, they really didn't like students leaving lunch, and they're like, you know, why can't we just lock the doors? And the other one, the sane one, was like, insanity was hard to come by on the administration staff, but
bless their heart.
The other one was like, you can't lock 600 kids in a room together from the outside. You know, what if there's a fire in the kitchen, for instance? Like, like, one of the vice principals at our school, honest to God, thought it was a good idea to think that we could lock hundreds of kids into a room from the outside and just lock them in. Were we in this plot?
Who knows? Okay.
Oh, locking the doors. The girls have started going out to the cave.
Yeah, whatever. They started a secret society, which involves them drinking whiskey. I wanted to drink whiskey in honor of that on this podcast, but Michelle didn't want to.
I have to drive home. Also, I don't really like whiskey that much.
It's not for you to like, it's just for you to drink.
They also cut their thumbs open and rub their blood on other
on their cheeks.
On their cheeks.
Yeah, the other girls' better cheeks. Than rubbing their blood together.
Yeah.
You don't want to do blood-to-blood transmission, generally speaking.
No.
Anyway.
It's, yeah, not advisable.
They cut themselves, they paint each other with their different blood on their cheekbones, they drink a lot of whiskey, which, this was a little bit unrealistic. It seemed like they, like, killed the bottle of whiskey, because they, like, they just passed around the circle, mm-hmm. like, again and again. And I was like, for four girls who, like, there's no way they have any experience with alcohol.
Right. Besides, like...
like, a sip of communion.
Right.
That's it. They just got a bottle of whiskey and, like...
well, I don't know how full it was to start with.
I don't know, but it really seemed like they were drinking a lot of whiskey.
Well, they were rolling over the next day.
Yeah, they just passed... I was just like, for four girls, four teenage girls who have no experience with alcohol, and now they're just sitting here downing whiskey, like...
one of them puked.
I'm like, I don't... this doesn't seem real good.
To the point where, like, the next day the teacher is, like, can smell the whiskey coming out of her pores. Which, like, it's never good. Also, that must...
I'm not sure I've ever been that drunk. I just want to... I mean, I hope.
I mean, also, like, I guess in that time, like, he wouldn't have showered in between.
I guess so.
I feel like I've never... I've also...
I don't think I've ever been that drunk. I mean, what's... I mean, whiskey, like, how much whiskey do you have to drink before you smell it on
your day? Cause like
I drink a lot of Franzia. I would drink a lot of whiskey though.
I mean, like, I've encountered people that like smell like alcohol, but it's normally the night. Oh, it's normally not the next day. Mm-hmm. It's not like the next day when they're hungover. I can smell the whiskey still in their
breath. Yeah, usually happens because you like spill it on your clothes or whatever.
Right, and you can smell it on your breath when you're drinking it.
Yeah, sure,
but not the next day. That seems unrealistic. So
she anyway, must drink they more. Drink so much whiskey that they're literally sweating it out the next day. So no one's passed out. No one threw up, supposedly.
Anna,
they all
Anna's
walked back
fine.
To school.
Right. No, yeah. Anna's fine. Anna probably didn't drink that much. She's a faker because she's smart. Felicity's fine because she probably has experience with this because she seems like the type. I mean, yeah. She was making out with gypsies just the other day, so we're not totally shocked by the fact that Felicity is just tired but not hungover. But we mostly see that Gemma is just, like, struggling.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is their secret society. Their secret society includes the girls that we named earlier, so it's Felicity, Gemma, Anne, and Pippa.
Yeah, so they read from this diary eventually. Oh, they start to meet, they start to do all
like,
this
stuff. Like, almost
nightly. Yeah, they start reading from this diary that Gemma brings out. And finally, Gemma lets them know that she had these visions. She tells them her secret. And she's learned more about them a little bit from Kartik, who keeps telling her, knock it the hell off. Before you make something really bad happen. But she can't, she's not, and he just wants her to stop having them. And he says, you should be able to control it. And yeah. to stop having them, to close yourself off from it. And Jim is really out of control with it, to the point where she's dancing with Pippa in their dance class. And she starts having them, but she, when she's, like, touching someone, she pulls them into it. So she pulls Pippa into this vision where she sees Pippa, like, drowning. And Pippa, it turns out, has epilepsy. And so Gemma is able to get out of this vision, but Pippa starts having a seizure. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's fine. She just has epilepsy, which is actually not fine at all. It's like a
yeah.
huge secret, and they have to keep it a very big secret.
Because no one wants to marry an epileptic. Right. Ew.
Yeah, I mean, it's considered you might have tainted blood or whatever.
Right, and they also they think it might be hereditary, so they don't want to pass it on to kids.
Yeah.
Also,
so.
It's just like... when your entire worth is based on appearance, as it would have been as a woman in this time,
yeah,
like having seizures really doesn't do good things for you. Right. You're at like a ball.
Yeah, it looks really bad. And so you know, it's her parents' goal to get her married off ASAP. And the headmistress is like, no one can talk about this ever to anyone.
Right.
If you do, like, I'll kill you. She doesn't say that, but it's the
equivalent. It's implied.
It's a boarding school equivalent of I'll kill you. And Gemma's just, like, freaking out because she thinks that she's, like, practically killed this girl. And that's when she tells them about the visions that she's having.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they're like, okay, let's go. And so Gemma finds a way to open the door to the realms.
Mm-hmm.
Because it turns out Gemma is part of this order. She has this power.
Mm-hmm.
And the order is this group of women who have been guardians of the realms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, the mythology is not totally worked out in this book. We still don't know all about
it. We don't know very much about the Order. Because the Order kind of died off when those two girls died. Mm-hmm. When Mary and Sarah both died. That, like, sealed off the realms. And so there wasn't really a need for an Order, so the Order kind of disassembled. But with Gemma and this, like, resurgence of power, it's also reopening.
Yeah, Gemma's supposed to be the one who can, like, reawaken it, and, like, Gemma's supposed to be the one that they get a new start with.
Yeah.
And so she ends up taking the girls to the realms, and they're just in this beautiful garden where, like, anything you want to have happen can happen.
Yeah.
Like, it's basically just, like, free magic everywhere.
Right.
Sounds pretty great.
It's like Willy Wonka, but even cooler.
Yeah, like, it's not just candy. It's
but you can't eat anything.
Yeah, you can't eat anything. If you eat something, you have to stay there forever.
Ooh, it's very much like
Persephone.
Yeah, I just got that now. But the girls, like, get their greatest desires, so all of them share what their greatest... That was also part of their ritual. Yeah. But they, like, get their greatest desires fulfilled in this place. So Gemma is with her mom again, and her mom, because her greatest desire was, like, self-knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so her mom is telling her more and more about kind of why these visions are happening to her, what happened with the Order, blah, 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 blah.
So her mom's in the garden there.
Yeah, her mom's in the garden. Felicity's wish is to be all powerful. She wants to be the most powerful person ever. And so she kind of gets, like, this huntress who's teaching her how to hunt, but also how to just wield power in general. And then Pippa wants to be loved. She, like, wants true love. And so she gets this knight that, like, loves her unconditionally and is the awesomest. And then Anne wants to be beautiful. And so she's just beautiful. Pretty straightforward. Yeah. So they have, like, their greatest desires in this garden. Mm-hmm. But Gemma's mom, at the same time, Gemma's mom is like, you guys can't come too often because, like, you can't handle it. Like, it's not good for you to be here all the time. And your, like, ability to resist, like, eating stuff and just not staying forever, the longer you stay, the harder it is to go back, sort of.
Yeah, and there's also, there's these runes that are in the garden. That's really the source of the power. Mm-hmm. And so if the girls were to touch it, especially Gemma, the conduit of it, they would gather all that tinsel. They could take the power back out into the real world, out of the realms. And mm-hmm. Gemma's mom is adamant that they cannot do this.
Right, because that opens the realms up not just for Gemma, but for anyone who would want to travel between them.
Yeah. And they know that, you know, because Gemma's mother was murdered, she gets that message, Cersei is near and she's murdered. And so Gemma's mother knows, and she tells them that, like, Cersei and, like, these people that want to destroy them, like, are out there. Like, you can't open the realms, you can't get this power back, you can't, like, let them get in, let them know that you know, like, it would be very dangerous for them and for everybody else. Obviously that also, because why would you, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's sort of, like, weird thing really start to happen, is that bad stuff is happening to all these girls. We don't find out about all the bad stuff that's happening to them until later books.
We know bad stuff for all of them, though.
Yeah.
So, obviously, Gemma's mom has been murdered. Her dad is, like, really struggling with that and is on some drugs. Yeah. And it's just, as I mentioned earlier, just a shell of a man.
Yeah.
And then we have Pippa and her epilepsy that's kind of hidden. And she's also about to be married off to Mr. Bumble.
Mr. Bumble.
Whose name says it all. He's, like, 50 years old. He's older than her dad. And it's just, like, gross. But her parents want to get her married off before people figure out about this epilepsy situation.
She's also being used as a pawn because there's some, like, talk about her father's gambling debts. Yep. And, like, they're very, very wealthy. So Pippa is merchant class. Mm-hmm. She's not part of the aristocracy, but she's very, very wealthy.
Right.
But it seems like maybe the wealth is running out, that they need to marry off their daughter to secure her future and to help them too.
Yeah.
So there's could be some other stuff going on in the background here.
And then we have Anne, who's, like, an orphan and doesn't have family. Like, her life is pretty straightforwardly miserable. Mm-hmm. And then we start to find out...
And Anne also self-harms.
Yeah.
She's cutting herself.
With embroidery needles. Which is not, like, great, obviously. And then we find out about... Because Felicity's life seems to be, like, the most perfect out of all of them. Like, you're not kind of surprised that other people have stuff going on. And you're not surprised that Felicity has stuff going on if you have ever read another book ever, but the girls are kind of surprised to find it. Well, Gemma, more than anything. So her dad is kind of, like, never around. And also
her dad's an admiral.
Yeah.
She's at sea 24/7, apparently.
Right, and he, like, doesn't come back for things. Like, they have a day where, like, the parent is supposed to come. And he doesn't come back for that. And also, Felicity's mom, we find out, isn't just, like, hanging out in Paris because she wants to and is, like...
I mean, it's bad enough that her mother is living apart.
Right.
It's kind of weird that her mom's in Paris no matter what.
But, like, initially we're just kind of... Well, her husband's an admiral, so, like, he's not going to be home anyway. So, like, she might as well live in Paris. Right. But it turns out that she is, like...
She's important then.
Yep. In Paris. Mm-hmm. And she is just hanging out with everybody, which is kind of where... And strangely, Felicity almost admires that, though, in her mom, because she wants to have... She wants it, and she wants to have the power over men. That's, like, I mean, we just talked about Felicity's biggest goal in life is to be, like, all-powerful. And she kind of sees...
I mean, not all-powerful, but powerful.
Powerful. I think she'd be cool with all the power. But she sees men as a way to do this, and so, although, like, the ideal is to have her married off, she says at one point that she's going to have, like, all the men. She's going to have gypsies and princes and...
Yeah.
And they're all going to be just, like, hers. And so she, yeah. So we find out, sort of, it makes a little bit more sense when we find out kind of her mother's situation.
Yeah. That's true. And then we find out there's other stuff that's going on, too, but we find out in later books.
Anyway, they're like, some magic in the real world would be hecka helpful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Gemma wants to heal her father, and... She doesn't want to get married off at the end of the week to this person. She really doesn't want
to Mr. Bumble. And Anne would like to be, like, have a chance to be married.
Right. Anything. Yeah, so they have all of these problems.
I don't know what Felicity really wants out of it. Felicity just wants power. There's no, like, direct consequence that Felicity wants. Which is, you can tell that Felicity's going to be in some trouble here, can't you?
None of these people are really set up. I mean, they all want it so badly, but you know they're not going to use it wisely.
Right. So one night, even though their mom is like, please don't take the magic out of the garden.
For, like, really good reasons. Like summoning, like, demonic powers, essentially.
Remember how I got killed by a demon? Yeah, let's maybe not bring those.
Right?
All around.
This is the part where this is, like, the horror movie part where you're like, why would you
blow up? Don't separate. Never split up. Yeah.
Why would you? Yeah. This is the part where I'm just like, why would you do this? Like, I understand you think it'd be cool.
But yeah, like, hecka cool.
And then, like, they have these big problems, but once they get the power, they don't use that to, they don't use their power to do anything about their problem. They just use it to, like, have it, and, like, it's really cool to, like, kind of be vindictive.
Yeah.
They don't actually use it to solve their real problems.
They're kind of mean to the other girls. Gemma uses it to be really good at French.
Yeah.
And sings a song. They don't sing any, yeah. So they have it for a day, and then the power starts to run out. And then Gemma's like, you know what, guys? Maybe we shouldn't do that again. That was actually probably a bad idea. Like, maybe we dodged a bullet this time and nothing really bad happened, but, like, we shouldn't do it again. But
well, Gemma starts to find out more about... So they have this diary.
Oh, yeah.
Which eventually they start to read in full.
Right.
They get to the end, and they find out, you know, how this ends, which is not well. Because Mary and Sarah, they're sort of, it's this, like, mirror story. It's sort of paralleling the girl's narrative only in this diary in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary and Sarah both had visions. They had this power. They went to the realms. Everything was cool. They were supposed to be learning how to control it. But Sarah's power has faded. And Eugenia Spence, the founder of the boarding school, who has apparently been guiding Mary and Sarah, and that's how the boarding school is all connected to this, has been guiding Mary and Sarah with their powers. Tells Mary, you know, sometimes that's how it happens. Sometimes it flares up, but then it will fade away for someone it's not really rooted in. So Sarah's power is leaving, and, you know, she's going to be okay with that. But Sarah's not okay with it, because, I mean, if you had this power, you know, and it was suddenly going away, I would imagine that'd be pretty not cool.
Yeah.
And there's one other way to get power if you don't have it in you, basically, and that is to make a sacrifice. Because there's the realms, but there's also the Winterlands, a part of the realms, and it's just, like, horrible. It's, like, hell-ish.
Duh.
It's a hell dimension.
We don't know very much about the Winterlands except what is talked about in the diaries.
Yeah.
In this book, we learn more.
It's apparently, like, fire and ice and, like, horrible stuff. And it's where, like, these trapped souls are at.
Right.
And if you're not able to cross over or something, if you get captured by one of them, you just stuck there. And it seems like maybe they can enter our world too, given the right conditions, I think.
Right.
Because that was, you know, the tracker that killed her mom, I think, was this Winterlands creature.
Okay.
Has some association. So that's the other way to get the powers, to bind it to yourself, and you have to make a sacrifice summoning this Winterlands creature, I think, to give the sacrifice to, and then the power will be bound to you as well. And so Sarah decides that that's what she's going to do, and Mary kind of gets dragged along into it. Again, there's, like, all of the girls in the plot could really use some more, like, moral fiber. All of the girls could really stand, like, put their foot down. To be like, you know, we're not going to make these stupid choices.
Right.
We're not going to do these things that are actually really bad. Nobody does. And so Sarah decides to sacrifice a gypsy girl. So they go, like, kidnap her. Like, this is very cold-blooded. Like, they kidnap this gypsy girl. They're in the East Wing. Mary, who doesn't want to be a part of this, but, like, while Sarah is summoning the creature or whatever, Mary is trying to hold the girl down. She puts her hand over the girl's face and, like, suffocates her, essentially. So Mary, who didn't even want to be a part of it, is the one who kills the girl.
Yeah. It sort of seems intentional.
Yeah, it does. I don't know how you unintentionally suffocate someone.
Right, because there's a because for a while she's just covering her mouth, mm-hmm. but then it's very clear that she intentionally covers her nose as well. Yeah. And the motive there is not super clear. Like, is it because she's trying to, like, catch that magic for herself? Or maybe she is trying to, like, save this child from being eaten by a monster.
Oh. I don't know. I didn't think about that. That maybe there was a fate worse than death.
Right. That the being girl. Stuck in the Winterland.
Yeah, I guess
would be even worse because... Then the monster comes and is like, this is useless to me.
Yeah, like, the creature is super upset. She's like, I need a living sacrifice.
Right.
And then Sarah freaks out at Mary because Mary killed the sacrifice. Mary?
And then the wing burns down? I don't remember how that happens.
Well, then there's like a fight, I think, and they end up kicking a candle over.
Huh.
And so then the fire starts.
Yeah.
Something's going on with Sarah and Mary decides to run and get Eugenia. Eugenia comes running, and to save the girls, because Sarah, I don't know, this is unclear to me, even though, again, we read it 24 hours.
We read it very quickly.
We were up to and including, like, 4 hours ago, 5 hours ago, I don't know when you finished.
I finished about 3:30.
Yeah, me too.
6 hours ago?
This part was still a little bit unclear to me, I guess, because we were also reading quickly. I think Sarah kind of opens this portal. You know, where, and this is what, I don't know if this is true, but it makes a lot of sense. Sarah kind of opens this portal, and so Eugenia, to, like, stop this from happening, has to sacrifice herself.
Yeah.
And she says, I will go, like, you two stay here. I will go to the Winterlands, essentially, and sacrifice myself. And in doing so, we'll close the realms.
Yeah.
So Eugenia gets sucked in, and she closes the realms, because it's just gotten out of control, and it has to stop until... Someone who's going to be Gemma is the one who's able to come and open it again.
Yeah.
So that's that. And so they get to the end of the diary, which is, like, chilling, you know.
Right, they kill the girl.
If you're Gemma, especially, because this seems, you know.
Right, this things are really very, bad. Very tied to her in a way that's not tied as much to the other girls.
Right. And so Gemma starts to get spooked. They also, you know, the year the East Wing burned down, the class photograph is missing. And so, and Gemma really wants to find out about who are Mary, who are Sarah, like, these girls, because they're the ones who are tied.
Right, right. And she also, by this point, by the time she finds the class photo, she's realized that Sarah never died in the fire.
How?
I don't know.
Are you sure?
I think so. I think so, because that maid is like, oh, I remember what Sarah used to go by. She used to go by Cersei.
Oh, that's and then, right.
And Gemma's like, shoot. I need to go find that picture because she's like, yeah. It could be anyone. I don't know what she, like.
Right, that's when, when she finds out that from the maid that Sarah used to call herself Cersei, that's when she's like, oh shit, Sarah didn't die in the fire. Mm-hmm. Because there's still Cersei out there.
Right. Cersei is the one that has been, if not killed her mother, sent the creature to kill her mother.
Yeah, so then she decides to go look to this photograph just to find out who these people are. And Sarah is apparently an MI6 operative. Because Sarah, when the class photo was taken, turned her head, so all you get is a blur. Uh-huh. And so Sarah, you can't see who she is, but she can see who Mary Dowd is super clearly because it's her mother.
Yep.
So Virginia Dowd, after the fire, like, ran away, became Virginia Doyle, and left all that behind her. And that's why they were in India, I think. Not so much because her father did anything, but because that, Virginia, yep. Gemma's mother, is trying to get as far from England as possible. Right. She thinks if she can just stay far enough away that everything will be fine.
Right, and she's trying to protect Gemma because she was told when Gemma was very, very young that Gemma was going to be the this resurgence of the Order. So she knows that Gemma holds this power, mm-hmm. and she knows that people are going to be after it.
Yeah.
So that happens, so Gemma's kind of fully aware of the situation, but the girls are very power hungry, particularly Felicity. Mm-hmm. And Felicity's like, fine, you're not going to take us? Then we will sacrifice something ourselves and we will go ourselves. We don't need you. This huntress that Felicity had been spending time with in the realms and had kind of taught her how to get back if she needed to by herself. And so they go find a deer and they like push it into a ravine or they trick it into a ravine.
It's real
unclear.
They go chasing the deer and somehow they manage to like run it off the ravine, I guess.
It doesn't die, but it's like laying there, and then the girls smash its head in with rocks.
Yeah, they totally start with rocks. All three of them. Like, Felicity starts, but Anne and Pip are totally in the space. They club this deer to death.
With rocks in their hand.
Yeah.
So then they go back.
Well, see, that's what they do, and Felicity, like, if you mean to sacrifice, now we just need to stand in a circle and summon up the door of light. That's how you get to the realms with you. Or Gemma does. She summons up this door of light and they walk through. But Gemma's the only one who's able to do it. So then Felicity tries, she makes a sacrifice, and lo and behold, it doesn't work. Because that's not how it works. And Felicity's been lied to, essentially. And so then she starts freaking out. She can't get back in, even though that's what the huntress told her. And then Kartik, the gypsy boy who's been warning them off the whole time, who also, side note, there's like definitely.
There's a weird, weird scene. We'll talk about it later. We should just talk about it at the end because it's strange.
That's fine. Kartik shows up. Also, these girls took off like everything to go run after this deer.
Felicity's
can't run after the deer in our corsets,
which like makes sense. But also, they like earlier they had been like running around in their like slips under their corsets, which like seems like perfect running around outfits. But Felicity's like, nah, we gotta be naked.
Fought hard into like the Artemis myth. You know?
Yeah.
So
they're naked.
Covered in blood. Around the body of a deer they just clubbed to death.
And they just
Kartik comes out of the woods and sees this, which
oh my gosh. And they like
turn right around.
They're like very graphically described. They're like the deer's head didn't resemble a head anymore. It like looked like a crushed like melon dropped from like a great height and you're just like, oh, okay. So this deer is not in good shape. It's not like maybe the girls, like, accidentally came upon this injured deer. Like, clearly these girls clubbed it to death with rocks in their hands.
Gemma's all like, I can explain.
Can you? Gemma.
Yeah, really. But then Gemma is like, fine, I'll take you back.
Because the girls are going crazy and...
But I can't remember why that is.
I wonder if Felicity threatens to kill people. I don't remember. Sorry, I think she's just kind of, like, overwhelmed by the girls and how, like... crazy they've gotten in this.
Well, Gemma's like flipping out, obviously. Oh, I remember. Okay, so Felicity freaks out because she sees Kartik, because Kartik sees them covered in blood over
naked.
The body of a dead deer. Like, yeah, so it's just like, oh shit. Felicity grabs a sharp stick and starts like, and like cuts them across the chest with it, I guess, and then like, wants, is about to like stab his eye. Like, these people have gone like crazy. With no help from the whiskey this time. And that's when Gemma like intervenes and she's like, oh my god, she's gonna kill this guy.
I'll take you, let's just,
you know, yeah, like, let's just
kill right, him. I think she's a little bit worried that Felicity's like, kind of deer didn't work, I'll kill a person.
But yeah, let's keep going.
So she takes them back, but they go back, and that's why she goes back to the ruins too.
Yeah. No.
Yeah?
Okay. What? They go back, and the huntress appears, and, that's when things start to unravel because Felicity finds out, hey, the huntress maybe doesn't have her best interest in heart. Surprise. And the huntress morphs into this terrible creature thing. And that's when everyone's like, okay, oh shit.
You right.
Know, this is bad. You know, maybe we shouldn't take power out of realms. Maybe we shouldn't have opened the realm. Maybe we shouldn't have trusted all these people that we trusted. Like, maybe we should have been a little bit smarter. I don't know if they said that, but that's something that I said in my head to these people.
Things start going really downhill, and they're like, shoot, maybe we should have listened to Gemma's mom.
Yeah. Jemma's mom.
Because Jemma's mom's like, also things in this world aren't always what they appear. Like, a kitten can appear as a monster and a monster can appear as a kitten.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that Jemma's mom is like, you cannot take this magic. Like, you can't control it. You don't have any experience with it. She's like, you can't see things from there. Because Jemma's mom, I think, like, creates a solution to the cloud and it freaks Jemma out. And she's like, look, like, you can't tell what's real and what's not. You have no ability to control this. And if you can't see things for what they really are, you're going to be in so much trouble.
And they didn't listen to Jemma's mom.
Yeah, whatever. That seems... Yeah, the world... really sound advice, like, whatever.
Yes, the world starts, like, really shifting when they get there, and everything is, like, gray. It's no longer a colorful garden, and, like, turns scary.
Yeah, it gets really bad, and then what happens to Pippa?
Pippa falls in the water.
But before that, she didn't fall in immediately. I don't know. The point is, bad stuff starts happening.
Bad stuff starts happening... Pippa falls in the water. Gemma's mom. Is this the time where Jemma goes over to the ruins? No. And she starts touching the ruins and then her mom starts touching the ruins? No. There's later? When does that happen?
Well, okay. So this.
Oh, when she goes back to try to save Pippa.
This huntress turns into this horrible creature.
Yeah.
Okay, and then.
Whatever, it doesn't really matter. Pippa falls in the water, she starts to drown. The girls start to panic, they leave. But they can't get Pippa out in time.
Yeah, so they're trying to get out.
This is fine. We don't need to know the details. So they're trying to get out, and the way out, Pippa falls in the water. She starts drowning in the river. They cannot get her out in time. They, like, have to get out the door. Yeah. And so they all leave. So they have Pippa's body, because Pippa's, like, stuck in this world. They bring Pippa's body back to the school.
Well, Pippa's body was never there in the realm. So her physical body's still in the physical world.
Yeah, so bring Pippa's body back to the school.
They don't bring... Oh, okay.
And then Gemma's like, I have to go back for Pippa. Like, we can't... We left her there. We have to go back for her.
Well, Felicity is freaking pissed. Like, that Gemma left right. Pippa behind. Which, again, it was, like, a life in a situation. Also, it really looked like Pippa was done for.
Right, Pippa, like, is drowning in the water. This is the vision that Gemma had earlier.
Yeah, exactly. And so they come back, they bring her body back. But Pippa's not dead yet.
She's in a coma.
Something. Yeah, and so they, you know, so call the doctor or whatever.
Gemma goes back to the realm. This time the realm is like, doesn't even have any appearance of being normal. Does it?
The realms?
Yeah. I feel like now it's just like, but her mom's there. And her mom is like,
I don't think her mom's there.
There's mom's a point, not there. There's a point where her mom's talking to her, and her mom's like, oh, touch the room, and then her mom touches her, and then Gemma has to let go really quick because her mom is not her mom.
Oh, okay, that's exact. Her mom's not there, since her mom's not there, but you're right, and her mom appears to be there.
Right, and then she realizes it's someone who's not her mom.
Yeah.
Someone that's trying to escape with her.
Yeah, she's trying to get Gemma to get all this power from the runes.
To pass it along to her, because Gemma's a conduit, so anyone who touches Gemma, while Gemma's touching the runes, also gets magic from.
Yeah, so Gemma realizes this, she smashes all the runes. Mm-hmm. Which, I don't, like, I mean, it seems like a solution, but I also would be, like, if that was me, I wouldn't do that, because, like, you don't know what else you're screwing up, you know?
Yeah,
that's like, what if you really need that later, and you're like, I smashed all that. Actually, whatever. I don't know. So she smashes all the runes.
She goes over to Pippa. Pippa's just chilling in the water now.
Yeah.
Pippa's actually, like, not dead in this world. She's just, like, literally just hanging out in the river. Mm-hmm. And Gemma's like, all right, let's go. And Pippa's like, no, I'm gonna stay here.
Yeah, so Pippa eats the berries to stay here.
Pippa eats the berries, and her knight comes for her. She just has decided, because we talked about this briefly. We touched on it when Pippa had the magic. She tried to get out of her engagement with Mr. Bumble, which seemed to work sort of temporarily.
They didn't use the magic to get out of her engagement. She used this lie.
Well, I think they used the magic to, like, help her with her lie, to, like, make it better. Anyway.
I don't think so. She just told the truth.
It was on the
day. It wasn't even a lie. She was just telling the truth.
Okay, whatever. She was telling the truth. It was on the day with the magic. So I felt like the magic, like, helped them. But maybe it didn't.
I think that was the spider backing.
Okay, whatever. I think, because the magic made them do everything better.
That's it. I feel like this is kind of the point, though. Like, it's the magic, and they're so... The idea is, like, they have these horrible lies, but they don't use it for any of their real
harms. Doesn't it literally doesn't matter. Also, I don't think it's clear on the text.
So but we'll go back and look at it later.
It doesn't freaking matter. so
But Mr. Bumble is like, never mind, I'll marry you anyway. Because Mr. Bumble had fallen about epilepsy, but then her parents said that she was just kidding.
Parents were like, it's fine, she has 4 feet.
And so she's like, I would rather just like stay in this garden world forever than have to marry Mr. Bumble.
Yeah, so she marries.
So she marries and
she dies in the real world.
Yep. And Gemma goes back. They have a funeral for her. The girls are like, shoot, things are getting crazy. And then that's pretty much the end.
The end.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, that's the book.
Yep. Do you want to talk about that weird scene we skipped in the middle there?
That's fine. Yeah. You're talking about question 9?
Question 9? I don't remember what question number was.
Pretty sure that's it.
Yeah. Isn't that the... Because you had that friend who was like... Don't you remember?
Yeah, but that was in book 3, yeah.
Book 3.
And I don't remember having any in book 3, but maybe I was a bad reader. Maybe I just...
Because I think that could have almost been interpreted.
Yeah, me too.
We're being so vague right now, so... Sorry. So, what really happens is pretty much Gemma has, like, a sex dream about the gypsy man.
Party, yeah.
And it's awkward. But it, like, starts out nice, and then she's like, stop leaving me alone, and he, like, doesn't. But it's just a dream.
It's bizarre.
But it's also a little unclear.
It's like, unclear.
He's, like, not super aggressive, but it's also, like, doesn't seem very consensual. Totally. I don't know. It's weird. I only picked up on it because Paige one time mentioned, and I didn't realize that it was in the third book, but one of her friends was like, do I remember the rape scene?
No,
the sex scene?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember anything.
Whoa.
Whatever. I just remembered a strange conversation.
I mean, Jim and Carta have this connection.
But isn't Carta also in love with, or like, in lust with Pippa?
Well, that's what Gemma sees from her perspective. Yeah. But it's not clear exactly what's going on.
Anyway.
I mean,
it was weird.
Gemma just keeps getting on his nerves. Carta just keeps being like, would you stop doing what you're doing? Because, we did mention this. Kartik and his brother are part of the Rakshana.
Oh, that's just important.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Are part of the Rakshana. Which the is Rakshana like, and the Order are, like, kind of connected. Mm. They're intertwined in this way.
It's like the brotherhood and the sisterhood. The Order is the sorority, and the Rakshana is the fraternity.
Yeah.
But the boys really don't, like, they just, like, keep the realms closed, be like, do not want to deal with them.
They don't have any access to the realms. The right thing. The Order is... Women are the ones with all the power.
And the Order is, like, wants to be obviously cautious with the power of the realms, but they don't want to, like, cut it off entirely.
Yeah, they're definitely into using it.
Yeah.
And the Rakshana...
And the guys are like, stop.
You can't bring this closer. The microphone. Yeah, the Rakshana want to keep this closed. They're like, horrible stuff's going to happen. They don't want anyone to have the power. But there is this close relationship because Karta's older brother, who's a Rakshana member, was the guardian for her mother.
Yeah. They're, like, closely tied.
Yeah, and so then it, you know, obviously Kartik and Tim are, like, then are the next generation of that relationship. Tim as, like, person in the Order, and then Kartik as this Rakshana member. And he just keeps being, like, you cannot do this.
Stop. Gemma just listens to no one.
No one.
Everyone is like, Gemma, stop. And she's like,
except for her friends.
Yeah.
They just kind of get carried away there.
Felicity, absolute power corrupts, absolutely.
Yeah. But, like, Gemma's, like, feels a connection, really attracted to Carter. And let's just assume that Carter is attracted to Gemma, because this is obviously where the story is going.
Anyway, it was a weird scene.
And it also involves, along with Gemma's vision, she has, apparently, dreams about him, too. It's unclear from the text. And Jim is not sure. She's like, she's not sure. She's like, shit. Was this only in my head? Was this just my dream? Like, it felt very real, so, like, please say it didn't happen. Right. But, like, is this a shared dream almost? Uh-huh. It could have also been that.
Or, like, at least a vision-esque dream. Or, like,
yeah,
some sense of the future. That's like the Slayer. Sometimes her dreams, she's like, are those just regular dreams? Or are these, like, prophetic dreams? It's a tricky situation to be in. Anyway.
Yeah. So, what was your point about that?
Nothing.
Oh.
No.
Their relationship becomes, like, a bigger deal, obviously, in the later books.
Yeah.
This is just for stuff getting set up.
Anyway. Anyway, so there were a few things we wanted to talk about, though.
Yeah.
Beyond that. So, one of the things I found really interesting about this book, and something that I thought the book did fairly well, was talk about female friendship in a way that some of our other books haven't done as well, particularly The Girls. Yeah. The Girls does a freaking horrible job, as we talked about.
Does a pretty bad job with most things.
I feel like this book does a really nice job about being able to address kind of the pettiness and the meanness. These girls are not nice.
These are horrible girls. Like, all of them have... And, you know, there's different things about them that make them sympathetic.
Right, absolutely.
And, like, in a horrible situation, Pippa's also, you know... And, I mean, like, Felicity, Pippa, Gemma, they're really wealthy. So there's a lot of ways in which, like, you know, like, stop complaining. Yeah, especially from a man's perspective. Like, you have wealth, you have a family, so... Like, maybe your parents aren't perfect, but, like, I don't even have parents. You know, there's a lot of stuff like that. But they're still, like, none of them are, like, in perfect situations. All of them have these struggles.
Right.
But they're still really horrible people.
They're really mean and they're really vindictive. And even Gemma, who is probably, I would say, probably one of the least vindictive amongst them, still wants to wield power. You can see how the fact that these girls have been stripped of power in every other aspect of their life has really played into, like, they want to control the dynamics of their friendships and control their standing within this community of girls because they're not going to be allowed to within the larger community.
I mean, it's very, like, survival of the fittest. Like, in boarding school,
yeah.
Where, like, you know, Felicity is, like, the queen bee or whatever. And, like, if you're not in her inner circle, like, life is going to suck for you.
Like, you're going to be miserable.
Because it's not just, like, you're going to be left out. People are going to come back to you because it's fun, I guess.
Right.
So they're very manipulative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's very much a... there's not a sense that, like, your standings are stable. So the girls at the top are always trying to just belittle the girls at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls at the bottom are just finding any way to claw their way up to the top.
Yeah.
And
Felicity will, even though Pippa and Felicity are, like, best friends, Felicity will, like, completely throw Pippa under the bus if it's helpful.
Right.
You know, the same. I mean, Pippa certainly have the power to throw Felicity under the bus, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. But she'll also try and, like, stab her in the back, too.
Right.
So.
Yeah, you can see. But at the same time, these girls, like, have trusted each other with their biggest secrets.
Yeah, which to me is weird.
Yeah.
I don't trust any of these people. Are you kidding? These people seem supremely untrustworthy.
Right.
They're extremely manipulative. They're, like, so self-interested.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you can't trust it. Like, I don't think these people can be responsible for a cat.
I think they just have goldfish. They have no other choices. Like, they all have so many secrets that it's just, like, impossible to keep all of them. And, like, for the most part, these secrets come out not in a way where they're just like, let me tell you about my secrets. They come out in a way in which
Pippa has a seizure.
Pippa just has a seizure. Like, everyone just knows that.
Well, then Felicity and Pippa are in a fight where Pippa decides to lash out at Felicity by saying, you know, at least my mother's not poor or whatever.
Yep.
So that's how that one comes out.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's also this sense of, like, when Pippa is left in the realms, like, Felicity is, like, devastated.
Yeah.
Right. But these girls, as, like, horrible as they are to each other, they, like, really do...
They're all they have, also.
Right. They really do love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you see that. I think as much as this is, like, these girls are just tearing each other down, you can also see that, like, that's all they have is each other.
Yeah.
And there is a reliance on each other.
Mm-hmm. And even Anne, though we didn't bring her up, like... seems like, okay, poor orphan scholarship, she seems like the nice, meek one. And, like, she is meek, but she's also, like, if she can get an opportunity to, like, improve her station, she'll take it.
She'll take
it. Triple on anyone. And, like, just like anyone else, she'll do everything in her power to make sure that she can do that. So they're very, like, all of them are very cruel to each other.
But, like... I think you see it the most with Pippa and Pippa's circumstance in this book, where they are also very sympathetic to each other's circumstances in a way. Like, the girls really do try to help Pippa get out of her engagement with Mr. Bumble.
Mm-hmm.
And they also, like, when she does die, like, a tragedy. Like,
mm-hmm.
They're not just, like, another one we don't have to fight with. Like, it is, like, very upsetting.
Yeah.
I think with Pippa we do get the biggest chance to see that, as long as they are standing in that stake, they're willing to do a lot for these other girls. But if it it could have any consequence to themselves, then, like, that kind of goes out the window.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very, like, you know, portrayal of female friendship that's, like, complicated at best.
Right.
Like, toxic at worst.
Right. But I feel
deadly, like, maybe. Like, yeah. You know, once we start killing deer, like, obviously that has the potential to just completely spiral out of control.
Yeah, and I feel like Love Abraid does a really great job of addressing those darker sides of female friendships, without just being like, girls, they're the worst.
Yeah, I mean, you could have, I mean, they are multidimensional portrayals, like, we do, like, they're not, in a lot of ways, they're not sympathetic. I, like, I don't, you know, there's so many things I don't agree with, I don't share the viewpoint of the characters, I really, like, think it's, they're horrible for doing these things. At the same time, though, they, like you said, there's all these, you know, good facets, too, where there are moments where they genuinely try to help each other. They do show kindness at points, but they also show, you know, a lot of cruelty, too. So,
right. Yeah. I think it was also helpful in the girls, all of their drama centers around boys. And in a larger sense, their drama does center around men in a way, but it's just men for the sake of, it's men in the sake,
in the understanding.
Right. Right. Yeah. So finding a husband is like their objective. So their lives and the standing is important because of men, but it's so indirectly related. It is really.
It's about them choosing that life revolves around that.
Right. And also, it's more about the power and the like livelihood that comes with being married rather than the romance of it for the most part.
Yeah. Like, Pippa's mom tries to talk her down by being like, there's a lot of independence in marriage. If you play your cards, you can get up with if you want.
Right. And he's old. They don't go into that, but Pippa.
Right? Just cross your fingers that there's a horrible accident or a sickness.
I got like 15, 20 years, and you're free.
This is going to be a long time. You have to live like that.
It's like her life. When you're 16, 15 to 20 years.
Yeah, my God.
Yeah. Anyway.
The next, like, 7 years seemed like an eternity to me.
But I really liked it. I also thought that, and I'd be interested to hear your opinion on this page. Mm-hmm. But I also felt like the girls' attitudes didn't feel as out of place as they might, as they did in, like, Blackmore. Where the main character was like, I just want to be free and live in India. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed so kind of, like, counter to everything that was happening. And didn't, it was, like, very much this, like, modern mentality stuck in this girl. Mm-hmm. Where I feel like these girls have a very modern understanding of life in some respects. It's very relatable to me in 2016, but at the same time, it didn't seem disingenuous and, like, very far removed from their society.
Yeah, I think that's true. I agree with that. Because in Blackmore, it was just, like, so grimy, like, I mean, not just with the main character, but the mothers, too. It was just, like, a lot of stuff where you're like, this is unrealistic. And this book, and I think, and this is the book, actually, we talked about tortured extended metaphors for, like, captivity in Blackmore in terms of historical fiction, period fiction. And Blackmore, it was birds. But in a lot of other books, I feel like it's corsets, because that's just a very easy symbol. I could have sworn that the corset imagery was heavily played on as a symbol for, like, captivity and restraint in this novel, but it wasn't, and I looked for it, and really it wasn't in here. I mean, they talk about corsets, obviously.
Right, and they talk about corsets, and they do take their corsets off to do things, but it was just a practicality thing.
No, it wasn't at all what I thought it was. Like, maybe it happens in later books, slash, maybe it happens not at all in these books, and it happens in other books. I would totally swear that it happens in other places, for sure, if not here. Slash, maybe I made it up. I don't know.
Yeah.
And there was a little bit of, like, that always kind of annoys me when the narrator is just, like, monologuing, like, how much they don't like their situation, how much they love freedom and stuff. It just seems like, I don't know. Like, I get it. Like, it seems realistic, but it seems very one-note.
Right.
And it just seems like, I feel like we just don't need a lot of monologuing to understand that point.
Right.
I feel like there's better ways to show it rather than tell it. But yeah, I think their attitudes are time period appropriate than in Blackmore, because, you know, they want things, they want out of things, but they're not, like, swearing off institutions necessarily.
Right.
They understand the confines of their time, and they're not
right.
trying to completely get out of it. They just want they what want, they have.
Right, they want the best of their situation. They don't want out of it.
Right.
Yeah, none of the girls are like, I don't ever want to be married. I mean, Felicity sort of indicates that a little bit when she's like, I just want all the guys. Like, but, like, even Pippa, who is, like, trying to get out of this marriage, isn't trying to get out of marriage as an institution. She's trying to get out of a loveless marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more on their behalf, on their part of, like, sort of accepting the status quo. Mm-hmm. But still trying, or at least knowing what the score is, and still trying to work around it, as right. opposed to just, like, pretending it doesn't exist.
I think they're trying to find, like, the best possible situation that is reasonable for them.
The best of all possible world, as Linus has said. Which reminds me, because related note, okay, so Candy by Voltaire satirizes Linus's ideas in the form of Pangloss.
Right.
Who talks about all this horrible stuff happens in Candide, basically the plot of Candide is like everything that could go wrong does in a spectacular fashion. And through it all, Pangloss, the philosopher tutor, this Candide, which, you know, sounds like candid, sounds like, you know, naive, that's what his name means too. Pangloss is just like, this is still the best of all possible worlds, which there's a little bit more merit to that philosophically than it sounds like in that particular story. Anyway, the point is, this is why it's related. At some point in this book, the art teacher talks about, she's like, you girls need to read. She go to the library, she get books. She's like, something about, like, your mind is a garden. You have to cultivate yeah. it. And I was like, oh my god. I don't know if that was a Candide reference, but it totally should be.
Yeah.
That's the last line of Candide. We must cultivate our garden.
Yep. No, she said, your mind is not a cage, it's a garden. You must cultivate it.
Yeah. Maybe it was a Candide reference. I choose something to ask what it was. Of course it was. Let's cultivate our garden. Yeah. We need, along the same lines as what right. I used for in this book, too.
Yeah. Wait. Yeah. Because our teacher's point is that, like, you might not be able to control your situation, but you can always control, or to some extent, you can control your mind. You can always continue to grow your mind and be more mm-hmm. educated. She says eventually it gets boring to just talk about the queen and the weather.
Exactly.
Which I imagine it would.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have a podcast just about the queen of the weather.
Yeah.
Those were my, that was the big thing I wanted to talk about was
that. Yeah. I think we
did it.
I didn't have any more notes and I felt really good about going out on that connection to candy.
Great. So let's do our scale and our recommendation. Do you remember our scale? I remember our scale.
Okay, good.
So on our scale, we are on the scale of homeschooled to Hogwarts.
Only for the alliteration, not for the continuity.
Yeah, we're gonna do boarding schools. We couldn't come up with enough good ones. Okay, guys, let's true confessions here. We give this the Gallagher Institute for Young Women.
Gallagher Academy for Exceptional Young Women or something.
We don't remember the title. I haven't actually read that book, so.
It's the Spice School from the Gallagher Girls books by Ally Carter.
So, page one, to go?
I mean,
obviously, I'd rather go to Hogwarts.
Or I would be in the CIA. That'd be cool.
Or Bo Batten.
Everyone thinks Hogwarts is, like, awesome, which it is. But also, like, Bo Batten's or
Beauxbatons
or whatever. I don't know.
The one that Fleur went
is
to.
Is really giving Hogwarts a run for the money in terms of the uniforms. Like, those blue dresses and capes and hats are, like...
Also, all girls. So awesome. Wizard school, yeah, I feel also, like, would be cooler.
Yeah, like, I went to a women's college, so, like, clearly I'm, like, very into that experience. The idea of sort of, like, focus on women and girls, especially in terms of education. Mm-hmm. So if you want to read more about... I've always loved stories about, like, girls at a boarding school, all girls boarding school, stuff like that. We can see why I picked women's college. I read a lot of novels. That's pretty much straight up the reason. So if you're fascinated by that, and also sort of the magic-y aspect, all that stuff, a chosen one who's female, I really highly suggest one of my favorite books ever, fantasy novel called A College of Magics by Caroline Stevermer. I don't know what that's last name, but it's spelled Stevermer. We recommended another Hesco, but it's not technically her book. She co-authored it with another fantasy writer. But this is one that she wrote herself. And she went to Bryn Mawr, which is what she sort of based her, like, college in this book on, which is, again, this is like, pretty much literally the reason I applied to women's colleges. Also because I really liked them after that. But this is, like, what got me interested in them. It's sort of like Harry Potter, if Harry Potter was set at, like, a really serious, like, academic school for women. It's based on, the main character is Ferris, and she is going to be the Duchess of Galazon in this country. But first, she gets shipped away by her regent, her uncle who's serving as the regent. She gets shipped away to Greenlaw College, which is commonly known as, like, this college for witches. It turns out witches. Though no actual magic is taught there, they learn, like, the trivium and the quadrivium, so, like, grammar, logic, rhetoric, like, astronomy, all that stuff, and, like, no actual magic is taught there, but magic is wound up in it, and, like, this really, like, cool, subtle, like, very different, and, like, very well done in terms of, like, world building, and it's her, stuff. I don't know how else to describe it. Lots of stuff happens. It's really good. Just read it. It's really good. And then you can tell me how you would have described it.
Because you can email us.
And then you can write us about your thoughts on it. Which we didn't give any of this information on the last podcast.
We did.
The last podcast, we just pressed stop and we were done. Which is what we should have done here too, but it's fine.
How long are we at?
An hour and 40.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Nailed it.
You can email us that.
Just like an hour
Smart
over.
Girls Wife.
Stacks.
We do not need to say this.
Gmail.com. It sounded really cool.
We did it.
It sounded awesome.
Anyway, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram.
It's so lit.
Our Twitter is so lit. It's a Smart Girls YA.
Oh my god.
And our Instagram is Smart Girls YA Stacks.
Oh, sorry that we pushed back. We said that July was all over us books, and clearly it's not because.
Yeah.
For podcast number 20, we didn't say any of this. We're so bad at podcasting. For podcast number 20, we wanted to do a special throwback edition.
Also, we only had one copy of this book.
That's also
and we didn't get it read in time for this book. But next week, you'll have a delayed, diverse book.
Yeah, that's what we meant to do, but then 20 came up before. We thought it was, whoops.
20 also... logistics.
Well, I also straight up planned for 20 to be a throwback episode.
Patient told me until last week. That's okay.
Whatever. I just assumed
we're here. Goodbye.